Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd, and it's Season 8, Episode 21. And we've already taped our interview with our guest. We didn't have a beat reporter on Wednesday, so we had Ben Gessling of the Star Tribune join us today. And it'll be the last 25 minutes or so of the podcast. And Dave, man, Ben's a rock star. It was great stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I forgot. You had said that we had him on, 4 years ago, I guess, and I just don't remember it. And boy, yeah, he was good. We could have talked to him probably another 30 minutes or so previewing this game, and he gave us some good insight and a few things to kind of look for this week as well too. So I think people will enjoy that interview later on in the show.
Yeah, that's fun stuff. He understands the scheme and what the Vikings are trying to do, and definitely some things that I wouldn't have known going into this game. So hopefully our listeners will enjoy it. All right, so here we are coming into Friday. What's the latest on the injury report and the update on what's going on?
Yeah, and we don't have the Friday injury report yet. It'll probably come out just as we upload this to the internets there. But as far as the Thursday injury report went, Stephon Tuitt did not work. That's probably not surprising. And look, with that bicep injury, no need to force this guy into action this week. I will be surprised if he's even as much as limited on Friday. I'm not expecting him to play. Tackle Gerald Hawkins with that knee is still not practicing. Not a big deal there. Because we expect him to be inactive. J.J. Wilcox still not practicing with that concussion. Mike Tomlin, of course, said that Wilcox came in on Monday with reporting concussion-like symptoms. Wilcox has been...
He's not going. He's out. He's clearly not going.
Yeah, and we'll see if that gets confirmed on the Friday practice report there. Bud Dupree still limited again on Thursday. And Bud, just like last week, seems to be insisting that he's going to play. He had me fooled last week, so I put him. I expected him to be active and didn't have him on my inactive guest list there. So we'll have to see what happens with Bud Dupree on Friday. I thought Mike Tomlin kind of made it somewhat clear that guys need to see him in practice before having him play in stadiums there. So really going to be interesting if Bud Dupree is limited for a third straight day on Friday. Now, the Steelers did have two new players added to the injury report. Vance McDonald with a back did not practice on Thursday. And Sean Davis, I think, left or was limited because of an ankle when he was added. So now you have two safeties. Sean Davis with an ankle, and then J.J. Wilcox with a concussion on your injury report there. And if indeed J.J. Wilcox gets ruled out, then you're down to Robert Golden, a banged up Sean Davis, and Mike Mitchell, and you really only have one safety that you can draw from. Sure, Jordan Dangerfield is on the market right now, but you would have thought he would have been brought back in. I don't think he can be re-signed yet anyway because he was given a small injury settlement when he was released from IR there.
I don't know that exactly what the deal is with that. Is there a number of weeks or days? Well, how does that work?
Yeah, I'll have to pull it up specifically, but I think it's something like 3 weeks.
I remember telling me that before, and that sounds right.
So like I said, you would think, and we'll see, but you would think that the player that makes the most sense right now would be Jacob Hagan to promote. I mean, Dangerfield's not even on your team right now. Yeah, I know he's got a lot of familiarity, but I mean, if you're game planning specifically and special teams and all like that, you would think that a guy like Dangerfield would have already been signed to the roster right now. So yeah, to me it'd be, and that's even if he's eligible to be signed, and I don't think he is. So we'll see what happens with Wilcox and of course Sean Davis on Friday. But it probably wouldn't be a huge surprise to see a guy like Jacob Hagan promoted from the practice squad on Saturday. And if indeed that happens,
Stevie Johnson.
What else are you gonna do? Even though you would like to have, you know, go into a game with four inside linebackers, geez, I mean, could you cut a guy like Matt Filer? You know, that would be an option as well too. I think as a guy like Matt Filer to waive, to get back, you know. I don't think you have to worry about anybody claiming him over the weekend or anything like that. So maybe you could have, Matt Filer do a turnaround, being as how he was going to be, you know, inactive anyway there. So definitely something to watch there. I think Friday, you know, will help us out a little bit whenever this injury report gets released. And as far as the Vikings go and their injury report, I think the biggest name to watch right now heading into Friday is Anthony Barr, their strong side linebacker. He was, did not practice the last 2 days. He is a guy that recorded, I think, 8 total tackles in that opener of theirs against the Saints. He's got a hamstring injury. Biggest name on, definitely the biggest name on the list to watch. Now, the Vikings did add cornerbacks Xavier Rhodes with a hip and cornerback Terrence Newman with a knee as limited on their Thursday practice report. So I suppose we'll watch them as well too. But I think Barr is the biggest name to watch on Friday with them. And to me, it'd kind of be a big loss if they don't have him in the lineup Sunday.
Yeah, will be. Dave, the Vikings, you know, they got everybody's attention, obviously playing, you know, the doubleheader on Monday night, and as potent as they looked offensively and as good as Sam Bradford played. We talked a lot about the receivers and Dalvin Cook on Wednesday. Were you at all surprised that the line came out at 7? I was a tad surprised it was that high.
Yeah, I was. And look, I mean, I got to admit to you, I know it was the Saints defense this, Saints defense that, but I thought as a whole, I was surprised with the way the Vikings played in that game. You know, Sam Bradford obviously coming off of a year where he had such a high completion percentage, has done fairly well over, you know, in recent years anyway as far as his completion percentage goes. What did he do? He completed something like 84.4% of those throws the other night against the Saints, and that would have been higher even. I think he had a drop or two involved in that as well too. And what did he complete? Something like 8 of 9 deep passes in that game. And when I saw that number initially, I usually use, you know, Wednesday or Thursday as an opportunity to go back through the opposing quarterback and time their snap to release, their snap to release times and all like that. And I'm thinking, oh man, he had 8 of 9 deep passes. He obviously had to hold on to the ball, you know, quite a bit there. I was expecting, a little bit maybe higher snap to throw time. Now, I had him come in at somewhere around 2.53, and I looked at what Pro Football Focus had with him, and they have him something along 2.38. So I think somebody over there at Pro Football Focus has a quick, has a quick trigger finger there. And normally I like to think when I'm doing these, these snap to throw times, I think, man, did I really see, you know, hit it right when the ball or was released or was a little bit quick there. So I tend to want to go with my number of around 2.53 just for the sheer fact of all the throws that he had deep down the field there. Now, the Saints offense was able to move the football on the Vikings, the Vikings defense did bow up there in the red zone. I think the Saints were something like 1 of 5 in the red zone there, and I think they had to settle for 3 field goals, and their only touchdown of the game came late pretty much when the game was out of hand there. But, yeah, I guess that's a long answer to your question there about the line. I was a little bit surprised to see the Steelers, you know, open as 7-point favorites there. And you have to think there's going to be, especially with the way the Steelers played in that opener against the Browns, there's going to be a lot of smart money pouring in on the Vikings here pretty soon.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for me. And when you think about it, obviously people are disappointed about how the Steelers played offensively. And, okay, so now they get a game under their belt, whether you think guys didn't play enough in the preseason or not. They all got their work in. They weren't going to play any more than they played on Sunday in the entire preseason. So everybody's got a game under the belts. They got a week of practice this week. They got a team coming in that's a good football team. They get to play them at home, Dave. But people are disappointed with the offense, and I'm questioning a little bit of the defense because of that drive they gave up late that we've talked about a fair bit over the past two podcasts. I'm not all that comfortable with this game. The way Bradford threw the ball with those receivers and Rudolph being a good tight end, I don't feel great about it. This is not one that I'm walking in saying, okay, the Steelers are going to be 2-0. Like we talked about to start the season, they should go 8-0 or 7-1 if they lose to Kansas City. I'm pulling back a little bit from that.
Yeah, I mean, how many times were we talking here leading up to the season? And I think you and I already had this game circled with Penn, right? For the Steelers. And then, now I got to be honest with you. I didn't watch a lot of preseason Viking stuff when it comes to that. But, you play enough fantasy football, you should already know who Stephon Diggs is and who Adam Thielen is and Sam Bradford. And if you watched any college football at all, you know who Dalvin Cook is and all. Like I said, you go back through that tape, David, against the Saints. And, yeah, I know it's the Saints and that defense. That was an impressive performance there by that offense. So I think if you're the Steelers, this is a great test to have, I think.
It is. I'm with you. And when I try to find weaknesses on the Vikings, the only thing I can point to is their two tackles. And I know we'll get into Riley Reiff. You mentioned him when we spoke with Ben coming up in a little bit. And Remmers on the other side, Bud Dupree should want to get on the field for this matchup. I think that's where the Steelers have an advantage. But you look through this roster, and even though, particularly on the defensive side, because what they did offensively, everybody saw them on Monday night, but you look at the defensive side, and they've got a bunch of high pedigree, high drafted names, but I don't know that a lot of these guys are common names. And I don't know, maybe it's because the Steelers don't see the Vikings or, it's Minnesota or what it is. But, I mean, Anthony Barr is a guy that I think everybody's heard his name. Linval Joseph, maybe, but they've got a lot of good football players that I don't think a lot of people probably are very familiar with. Maybe Harrison Smith's another guy that people know because, went to Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think more so with those of us that do the draft homework and all, but I mean, Hunter there, the kid out of LSU, and Linval Joseph, of course, and Anthony Barr, all these were kind of, especially a guy like Barr, were higher profile names coming out of college there. But I mean, you look at some of the names in the secondary, though, as you said, everybody should know a guy, a name like Trey Waynes and Xavier Rhodes, just because of their pedigree there. Now, they're front four. Yeah, I'm more in line with you there. But, I mean, a guy like Everson Griffin is a guy that, if you watch any highlights over the last couple of years of the Vikings, you should have heard his name called quite a bit. But in short, I think the thing with the Vikings, especially with the defense, and this is something that I wrote about yesterday. It's kind of been the narrative since Mike Tomlin talked on Tuesday as well, too. This is a Mike Zimmer team, especially defensive side of football, that's got his fingerprints all over it, stemming back to his time with the Bengals there. So this is by no you know, stretching the imagination. Should any a lot of what the Vikings do on defensive side of the ball, none of this really should be foreign to what the Steelers are seeing on tape right now. And I think Alex Cazor did a nice breakdown of that defense, this morning on Steelers Depot. There probably going to see quite a bit of single high stuff, some man underneath and all. But on top of it, I think boy, if you want a game for Le'Veon Bell, to really, hit the ground running with, I think this is a defensive front that can be run on, and especially if they don't have a guy like Anthony Barr in there as well too. Look, I think what you want to do is you want to come out and establish this run early. You want to try to get these safeties and all respecting it all. And I think this is also a game where why wouldn't you pay a lot of attention to Antonio Brown? I think they're going to need Martavis Bryant to make a few big plays in this game, and I think we could see him lined up quite a bit on a guy like Trey Waynes, and I think that's a matchup that the Steelers need to try to exploit, is Martavis Bryant on Trey Waynes.
Yeah, good stuff. A lot of good stuff there from you. And just talking about Mike Zimmer and the way they're going to play, you look at this front four. And what they do is they'll play, Linval Joseph's going to be a one technique guy. He's going to play on the nose, and they're going to stunt a little bit like the Bengals did when you talk about their two inside guys. And Tom Johnson will be more. And the Ravens play a little bit of this too. They play some of the same technique with their inside guys. I'm with you. You look at where the Vikings. I think the Vikings finished third in the NFL last year in defense, and of course, when you look at cumulative yards, obviously everybody's getting more passing yards than running yards, and it was their pass defense that was so good. They were right up top in the top group, but the run defense, as you mentioned, wasn't. I don't even think they were in the top half. So I'm with you. I think it will be a little bit different than what we saw coming out of the shoot in Cleveland. I think you'll see the Steelers try to establish the run and a heavy dose of Le'Veon Bell here early in this game. That's what I would expect, and go from there. And you talked about, one of the things the Bengals do against the Steelers, and Ben has had trouble with this over the years, is the Bengals play that cover two and then play both their safeties up high. And it's not necessarily exactly how the Vikings do it. So I'm going to be interested to see what they do here, particularly with Harrison Smith, if they have him down in the box to try and support the run game, or if they keep him away from the line of scrimmage. So just another thing to keep an eye on, number 22, the safety, how he lines up in this game.
Yeah, and I think we saw in this game as well, too, against the Saints. And the Saints, Kobe Flaner had a little bit of success over them running up the seam there as well, too. So, can the Steelers exploit kind of the middle areas of the field? This is a Vikings defense, too, that I believe should be susceptible to kind of the dump offs to Le'Veon Bell, and I know there's been a lot written and said about how the Steelers used we might even see it nine times again against the Vikings as well. Four wide receiver sets, one tight end, an empty backfield. I think I might try to use that a little bit against the Vikings. I want to get as many either I want their sub package on the field, and some of those guys a little bit deeper down the depth chart on the field, the McKenzie Alexanders, if you will. Those are maybe the guys that I want on the field. And I think Ben mentioned something that listeners will find interesting as well, too. Watch where Terrence Newman lines up, and watch where a guy like Xavier Rhodes lines up. I think he expects him to follow Antonio around the field, but will he follow him into the slot? And if not, who's going to line up against Antonio Brown? Is it going to be old man Terrence Newman not going to be able to run with Antonio Brown in the slot? So could we see a situation where a young kid like McKenzie Alexander has to do something along those lines? So nine plays against the Browns with four wide receivers, one tight end, no running back. David, those nine plays averaged 12 yards per pass play. Now, I think seven of them, according to our charting, came in drives number four and five, which were obviously in the second quarter there. And then the only other couple, and Antonio Brown obviously had something like 7 of those catches for 108 yards or something along those lines there. So I don't think we're going to see, you know, 15, 20 plays with that. But to show you how rare that it is that, you know, that the offense uses 4 wide receivers, 1 tight end, and goes empty, that 9 on Sunday against the Browns was more than they did all last season and more than they did all, you know, 2015 as well. Now, is this some sort of punishment for Le'Veon Bell, you know, this, that, and the other, yada, yada, yada? No. But on the flip side, how often do you want to take a guy like Le'Veon Bell off the field? I think this is I think the Viking, and that's where I was kind of leading into this thought, was I think Le'Veon Bell is a kind of player that can hurt the Vikings defense if you use him more in the passing game out of the backfield on some of these, you know, choice routes or option routes, as they call them.
All right, Dave, do we want to go to Ben, and then we'll come back and do our picks for the week?
Yeah, man, I could talk about this.
It's going to be a good one. I'm excited for this game.
Can we make this a 4-hour podcast today? But go ahead.
Yeah, I would say some of our listeners have commented because, when we started this thing, we tried to keep it at 40 minutes because we had some commitments with Steelers Nation Radio and some other things. We don't have a lot of commitments anymore. We definitely try to keep it in an hour, but I appreciate all the nice feedback when they're like, yeah, I got a 2-hour commute. Just let it rip as long as you want.
Yeah, you know what the old saying, you know what it means when the pastor takes off his watch, right?
Yeah, settle in. All right, well, listen, we've done this with Ben. We'll let that rip right now. We'll come back and give you our picks for the week. Okay, welcome back. And because we weren't able to get our man Ben Gessling on Wednesday, we're previewing the Vikings today. Matchup, of course, at Heinz Field, the season opener for the Steelers, 1 o'clock. Steelers-Vikings, both teams coming in 1-0. And we're pleased to be joined by Ben Gessling. And if you're a longtime listener to the Terrible Podcast, you remember Ben was with us 4 years ago when the Steelers and the Vikings played in London. And the Vikings put it on the Steelers. You remember they started 0-4 in 2013. That's the only home opener they lost. With Mike Tomlin to the Houston Texans that year. And then, of course, things were off the rails for a bit and finished 8-8. But, Ben, thanks for taking the time, as always, to be with us. You can follow Ben on Twitter at his name, GOESSLINGSTRIB for Star Tribune.
Glad to be with you guys.
All right.
The last time we did this, I was in London, if I recall.
Yeah, exactly. The Steelers wish they weren't in London. Dave and I were talking about it on Wednesday. All the missed tackles and the kind of explosive plays the Vikings put on the Steelers. You know, this is an interesting Vikings team, and obviously they captivated the country a bit Monday night with the start that Bradford and his receivers got off to. But from 30,000 feet, give us the view of Mike Zimmer, because he's a guy that we're familiar with, having been in Cincinnati for as long as he was as a defensive coordinator. What kind of coach is Mike Zimmer?
Well, it's certainly the defense that you guys know, it has been his calling card here, obviously. I mean, they brought him in to fix that defense. I mean, it was the worst defense in the league back in 2013. And the game they played against the Steelers came right down to the end, and they were able to make a stop in that game to win it. That year, that was a rarity. They lost 5 games from the last minute that year. So when they brought him in, it was, we want somebody to help fix this defense, and if we can't get a quarterback that can trade touchdowns with Aaron Rodgers, we want to have somebody to build the defense that can slow him down. And that really has been the calling card, you know, that took them, of course, to a division title in 2015. But, I mean, the question here with the Vikings is, I mean, it's great to have a defense, but, you know, certainly the Steelers have seen this, that you have to be able to have a prolific offense to win in the NFL for the most part these days. And it's a lot harder to do that if you don't. And so the Vikings spent the better part of the offseason trying to fix their offense, of course. And the question is, have they done it? And I think the other question with Mike Zimmer is he a good defensive coach that is going to have trouble being a good head coach, or can he do the whole thing? I think kind of growing into the job has taken him a little bit of time to understand, you know, what it's like to be the face of a franchise, to be the CEO of a team, all of that kind of stuff that you have to do that you don't worry about when you're a coordinator. And certainly last year, I think, stretched him in a lot of ways. When they start 5-0 and they have injuries left and right and his quarterback goes down, and he has eye issues the entire season on top of everything else. You know, of course, finishing 8-8, push the Vikings in a different direction, I think, than people thought they'd be after winning that division title in 2015. So, you know, schematically, he's a very good coach, certainly on the defensive side of the ball. I think he's still trying to get his sea legs in a lot of other facets of the job.
We all like to rank quarterbacks. It's the easiest position probably to rank, and because obviously the game revolves around these guys, and they're the elite guys, and we make fun of Joe Flacco. Is Joe Flacco elite? Is Sam Bradford one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the NFL?
Boy, at 10 best, I don't think I'd put him in the top 10. He certainly has the capability of being that good when he is on, like he was on Monday night. But, I would still, obviously, you got Brady, Rodgers, Roethlisberger, Breeze probably still ahead of him. Russell Wilson, I guess you probably, beyond that, you have guys like, probably Philip Rivers and, Joe Flacco, I think you probably have to put above him Eli Manning. A lot of guys, and then he's probably kind of in that next group with Kirk Cousins and Matthew Stafford and Alex Smith and, guys like that where, on a given day, they can get the job done and they're good enough to win with. But the question with Sam Bradford is always, is he good enough to win when not everything is going right around him? And that's, I think, what kind of the Vikings need to see. And they've done everything they can to set him up for success and, put pieces around him to win with. But the great quarterbacks are able to get it done when not everything is going right around them. I don't know if he's that type of guy, but those guys are hard to find. And if you don't have one, you can't just crawl in a hole. You got to find another way to win if you don't have one.
Ben, what was, if you look back, say about 3 weeks ago, what was the narrative surrounding the 2017 Minnesota Vikings? And has any of that changed following their impressive win Monday night over the Saints?
Well, the narrative certainly has been, is this offense going to be any better? And specifically, is this offensive line going to be any better? Injuries took it apart last year, but it wasn't good when guys were healthy, and it hadn't been good for a couple of years beforehand. So, they spend the money on two tackles, Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers, who are not great pass protectors, but they're hoping would help fix the running game. And, the idea of the running game needing to be fixed is kind of a strange sentence to utter in Minnesota, given who has been in the backfield the last 10 years, but that has been redesigned as well. You're going to see a lot of different running games. So the question going into the season was, is any of this going to work? And, I think the way they played Monday night showed you that when they're on, yes, it can work. But the caveat I guess I would attach to Monday night is that Saints defense is not good. They have 8 new starters. You're going to see a pretty big step up in class on Sunday. And Sunday, I think, will give us a lot better idea of whether the narrative should change or whether the Vikings can kind of prove that the new offense can work.
It's not hard to look at a guy like Stephon Diggs and see a little bit of Antonio Brown there, and then Adam Thielen. Boy, this what a nice out of nowhere surprise that kid's become. But a lot of people forget that Laquon Treadwell's over there as well too. Is this kid gonna make it? I don't think we saw too terribly much of him Monday night there. Is this guy going to be able to be a weapon sooner rather than later? And are we going to see him a little bit Sunday against the Steelers?
You will see him on the field. Whether you see him make a lot of plays is the other question. He was on the field, I think, for 51% of their snaps Monday night, which is, for him is a pretty big chunk. I don't know that there were many times last year where he played that much, and they are certainly trying to see if he can be their third receiver. Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen, like you mentioned, they're going to be the top two guys. And Treadwell is right now the guy that's getting most of the run in the three receiver set. He only caught one pass, only had one pass targeted his way. And a lot of that is still because he is not, he's never been a fast guy, but being able to be quick enough in his routes and detailed enough in his routes to separate from corners remains an issue. So when you have two guys in Thielen and Diggs who have turned out to be a lot better than people thought, largely because of how good they are as route runners, Sam Bradford's going to look their way, and Treadwell hasn't gotten the ball much yet. And he will be on the field, but it's an important 3 weeks for him here, because when Michael Floyd comes back in another 3 weeks from that suspension, I think he's going to be a big part of this offense. So for Treadwell, I don't want to say it's now or never, but it's probably closer to that than a lot of people might think, just because I don't think that they're in a position, because they had a fifth round pick and an undrafted free agent emerge, that they have to wait forever on the first round pick to pan out.
How good are these two receivers? I mean, you know, what we saw, Stephon Diggs, we were talking on Wednesday on the podcast, and I was putting Stephon Diggs as a top 10 guy in the league. Thielen, I mean, the story's crazy. You know, the narratives of being a white receiver, and Dave and I were trying to draw comparisons as, you know, the Jordy Nelson, the Eric Decker. I mean, he's got a skill set that is not common in the NFL. Where do you put these guys?
Well, I mean, Diggs, first of all, I mean, you know, certainly a guy that is, you know, the Pitt, I think, wanted to recruit when he was coming out of Maryland. He was the top player in the country. Actually, I think Scott Turner, the former Vikings quarterback coach, was the receivers coach at Pitt at the time. And when he was with the Vikings and Diggs was coming out of the draft, he was actually the one banging the table saying, we have to take a look at this guy. And the Antonio Brown comparisons have been made. Mike Wallace made them when he was here. You know, he got asked when Diggs was a rookie, who does he remind you of? And the first name he uttered was Antonio Brown. And, you know, it's not ridiculous. It's, you know, he doesn't have the track record yet of Brown, certainly. And he needs to stay healthy. He needs to be that productive, but the skill set is similar. I mean, in terms of how they run routes, in terms of their size, their ability to move around the field, the fact that neither one was a terribly highly drafted guy and was able to make it, you know, that certainly is a template for what Diggs could become if he continues to grow. And Adam Thielen certainly, I mean, Adam Thielen is 6'3" and runs a sub 4.5 40. It's one of those things where, if he wasn't a white kid from northern Minnesota, you might look at him a lot differently. I mean, yeah. You know, and came out of it by his own admission, didn't play, high school football was not his main sport. He was a golfer. And, you know, the Vikings didn't even really know what they had when they signed him. And then he got like two reps in a practice in a rookie camp tryout. And they said, okay, well, we'll take a look at you. And the story really with him is pretty incredible.
To me, it was an Adrian Peterson decision was a no-brainer. They go get Dalvin Cook. There are a lot of people who look at the backs coming out of the draft, and you've got Leonard Fournette up top and Cook and Mixon. He certainly looked like the real deal on Monday night. What are your thoughts on what you've seen of him so far?
Well, he certainly is a good fit for what they want to do now. I mean, now it's zone running. It's, you know, shotgun handoffs. It's being able to throw the ball to the running backs of the backfield. I mean, it's basically the things that you didn't see from Adrian Peterson all those years. So, I mean, they wanted to move in a different direction, which is why I agree it was a no-brainer to not bring him back, even if it is hard to cut ties with a guy that's been the face of your franchise and a guy that will go down as one of the great offensive players in the history of your team. But it was time, and I think when they got a chance to draft Dalvin Cook, I mean, they woke up on the second day of the draft saying, we can go get this guy. I mean, I don't think they thought he was going to be there. I mean, every team always says that. But, you know, most of the projections had Dalvin Cook going in the first round. And whether it was concerns about injuries or concerns about some of the off-the-field stuff that had been attached to him before the draft, you know, I think that's part of why he slipped. But, yeah, I mean, he has been impressive so far. And the thing that has been the most impressive, I guess, to me is the degree to which he picks up on the nuances fairly quickly. I mean, he was a guy that had to learn path blocking a little bit. That was one of the things that they said, you're going to have to get better at. He is already doing it, I think, more efficiently and more reliably than we ever saw Adrian Peterson do it. So not going to be the same kind of threat as Adrian Peterson, just because as good as Dalvin Cook could be, guys like Adrian Peterson just don't come around very often. But I think he could be a very good running back, a very versatile running back, and maybe not give them the same same set of problems that they have to work through to accommodate him in the offense that Adrian did at times.
Ben, when you flip over to the defensive side of the ball, probably not a lot of names that fans in Pittsburgh are familiar with. But, you know, I think football fans as a whole, everybody should know who Linval Joseph is. Everson Griffin, obviously, probably not so much a guy like Daniel Hunter out of LSU. But and then when you look at the linebacker core, everybody should know the name Anthony Barr. But Anthony Barr has had some issues this week, I believe, with a hamstring in practice. Don't believe he's practiced the first 2 days. Is he going to play? And if he doesn't, how big a loss is that going to be for that Vikings defense?
Well, we'll have a better idea, I think, a little later today if he's going to play. I mean, you know, he was out there on the field yesterday, did not have a helmet, obviously did not participate, but looked like he was trying to walk through some of the drills. Friday, typically, as it is in most places in the NFL, will be the practice that if you're not out there for that, it would be hard to see him going. I mean, he's had injury issues in the past and certainly needs to be in the spot where he's not dealing with that all of this year because he's got a lot of money riding on whether he's better this year. And if he's not on the field, to me, that's a big loss because, you know, he was a guy last year that he didn't have a great season. Mike Zimmer said towards the end of the season, he has a tendency to coast at times. And that, you know, I think that comment opened a lot of eyes around here and Barr admitted that, yeah, my effort wasn't always what it needed to be last year. But yeah, I think both because he needed to rebound and because there's a lot of money riding on him doing so, he had a good camp. And I think is a little more of an impact, certainly was more of an impact on Monday night than he had been at any point in the past. And if he's not out there, I mean, he's as good a guy as they have at blowing up screens, blowing up throws to running backs, you know, because of his quickness, because of how physical he could be at his size. So, I mean, if he's not there, detaining Le'Veon Bell becomes a lot harder, I think.
Boy, when you look at this secondary, Trey Waynes, Xavier Rhodes, old man Terrence Newman, can't believe he's still getting it done right now. And then you even look further down the depth chart, you see a guy like Mackenzie Alexander, the kid out of, I believe, Clemson there. I did a lot of tape study on him ahead of his year. And then even further back, a guy like Tremaine Brock, who I think missed that week one game there. If you know, what are you expecting the Vikings? Do you expect Rhodes to follow Antonio Brown around the field? Do you think they'll stay on their sides there? Is Terrence Newman the obvious biggest weakest link in that defense? And what's going on with Mackenzie Alexander that he can't see the field?
Well, I mean, on the Rhodes front, yes, I do expect him to follow Antonio Brown. It has looked in practice this week in a little bit that we've seen like they're probably going to go that way. I mean, the only question there would be what that means for Trey Waynes on the other side, because obviously if Rhodes is following, that means Waynes has to play a couple different spots, but he has done that, I think, in the past enough that they wouldn't hesitate on that basis. But when Rhodes follows a receiver, he typically does not go into the slot with that guy. And that's really where, to me, if you're the Steelers this week, you're saying, okay, we're going to put Antonio Brown on the slot and see if they can cover him, because obviously, a receiver like that is hard enough to cover, but you've got Mackenzie Alexander, who's a second-year corner that really had a hard time earning their trust last year. He did not take coaching very well. He was not a guy that wanted to listen. He's admitted that. And you know, at the end of the preseason, he gets a kind of knuckleheaded taunting penalty in the last preseason game, and they go make the trade for Tremaine Brock the next day. I don't think Brock will be in the slot this week. He has said that they have been working him mostly on the outside at this point before he goes and learns the nuances of playing inside. So it'll probably be mostly Mackenzie Alexander and Terrence Newman. And Newman has Mike Zimmer's trust like nobody else. I mean, he was with him as a rookie in Dallas. He was obviously following him to Cincinnati, following him to Minnesota. I think at this point he said, I won't play for anybody else. And he knows Zimmer's system probably well enough to coach it. But he is 39. He's still very technically sound. He's still in great shape for 39. But asking the 39-year-old to cover Antonio Brown is a tall task. So, to me, if I'm the Steelers, that's the matchup I'm trying to exploit, is put Antonio Brown on the slot and see what he can do.
That's an interesting point for our listeners to follow, because AB is often the lone receiver on the side that he lines up in. They will move him around. They'll motion him occasionally, but it's not their favorite thing to do. So, that's definitely something for us to pay attention to. Ben, which is the better side of the ball for the Vikings?
The defense certainly is. I mean, you know, the defense has been the calling card here for the last few years, and that's kind of been the thing that sets the tone, and that's really where they spent their money too. I mean, they did three extensions for guys in the first 2 weeks of camp, and only one of those guys, Xavier Rhodes, was heading into the last year of his deal. They were trying to get ahead of some things because they have so many guys that they have to pay here, whether it's Danielle Hunter, possibly Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks. I mean, they have a lot of guys coming up here and guys that drafted that are going to be due for big contracts. So, and that's where they spent their money. That's where they kind of used their top-end draft picks. That is where Mike Zimmer, I think, would place a lot of his identity, and that's going to be the thing that wins them a lot of games, if in fact they do win a lot of games. The question is, can their offense do enough? And on Sunday in Pittsburgh, I think that is going to be a big litmus test for that offense, just to say, can you go on the Heinz Field against that team on the road and produce? Because if they can, I mean, that would be a pretty big statement for them.
It is, and you opened up by talking about how, you know, Sunday will be, you know, a real test for the Vikings, and we'll get to know. And for the Steelers, it's very much the same thing, a little bit of a lackluster win against the Browns on Sunday. And I do think a lot of the fan base is concerned at seeing what the Vikings did offensively. And I just – you watch that game and you see what they did offensively, and I'm not sure people understand how good this Vikings defense is. You talked about spending top picks. I mean, Harrison, first-round picks, Harrison Smith, Rhodes, 12, 13, Barr, 14, Waynes, 15, Mackenzie Alexander, 16, his second-round pick. I mean, they've got a lot of guys, and, you know, they're gonna play a 4-3, kind of Zimmer's calling card. How will they play in the secondary? What kind of scheme will they use? We talked about, obviously, what they'll do with Antonio Brown, but what will be the scheme they use primarily?
Yeah, I mean, they get characterized a lot as press man, and that's kind of a misnomer. I mean, they will do some of that. They certainly will play a fair amount of man coverage on the outside. I mean, certainly you'll see Xavier Rhodes do it, though if he is shadowing Antonio Brown, he will probably get help from Harrison Smith. They have liked to bracket guys like Odell Beckham, DeAndre Hopkins, Kelvin Benjamin when they've done this in the past. So they will probably do some of that, I would expect, with Harrison Smith, but in the intermediate and shorter routes, it's a lot of pattern matching type stuff. They play a lot of zone within man kind of things where, you know, a lot of it with Mike Zimmer is understanding coverage rules, understanding where you're supposed to be. It's not a lot of terribly tricky stuff, I guess, but I think he would describe it as fairly simple, but it is predicated on guys being able to think, being able to know where they're supposed to be and not beating themselves. And that really, to him, is the most important thing. He's not a guy that goes out and says, go, you know, pick off 5-6 passes a year if you're a cornerback. His main thing is don't let your guy catch the ball. You hear him say that all the time. And they've, for the most part, done a pretty good job with that. But, you know, Sunday is certainly going to be one of those tests, especially, you know, if you're able to throw, you know, some of the stack releases that the Steelers like to throw at people, because then you're stressing some of these guys who are in new spots to say, you know, what's your coverage rule and how are you going to be able to react to it? So, I mean, to me, that's going to be one of those things to watch too, is how much the Steelers try to throw stacks in there and try to hit them on quick releases that get somebody open.
Before David gets you out of here, boy, we could talk to you another 30 minutes here, because you, it's obvious that you know what's going on there in Minnesota, especially scheme-wise there. But I'm not sure if you watched the All-22 yet on the Steelers game against the Browns. Obviously, Joe Thomas is arguably the best left tackle in the league, especially from the technique standpoint. And, yes, he got the best of T.J. Watt a few times in that game, but Watt really, really showed a lot against the old man there. Is this a matchup that you think, I mean, look, Riley Reiff has, you know, obviously probably not regarded as a top, I don't know, you know, 5-6, maybe top 10 at best with Riley Reiff there. Is this a matchup that could really give the Vikings problems here with a guy like Watt versus Riley Reiff?
Yeah, I think it certainly could. I mean, that's one of those spots where if I'm the Steelers, that's something I'm looking to exploit. I mean, Riley Reiff was signed to be a run blocker here. And it's, you know, it was a bad year to need tackles, and certainly a bad year to need two of them, as the Vikings did. But, you know, Mike Zimmer said that in the offseason, that these guys are probably better run blockers than they are pass protectors. And a lot of the reason the Vikings did that, I mean, you say, well, left tackle, I needed to be able to protect my quarterback. But They also needed to be able to not have their quarterback in as many third and eights as they were last year, because that obviously puts in at some risk too, because defenses can say we can just put our ears back. And, you know, but Riley Reiff, I mean, was a left tackle in Detroit, and they thought enough of him as a left tackle that they used a first round pick on Taylor Decker and moved him to the right side. So, and that doesn't speak terribly highly of him as a pass protector. And he was good last week. He did a nice job on Monday night. You really didn't hear his name, which for a left tackle is probably as sweet of a song as there is. But yeah, with him there and Nick Easton on the left side, who didn't play terribly well Monday night, it was his first game at left guard. I would expect that whether it's TJ Watt or whether that's, you know, throwing some blitzes there to see if you can overload that side, I that certainly is a spot where I think the Steelers can make some hay. And if the Vikings are able to hold up there, and that will probably tell the tale of whether they're able to be productive on offense. Because like, to me in this game, protecting Sam Bradford gets a lot harder. And if they're able to do it, then you start to say, okay, this offensive line is a lot better, and you have something going forward. And, you know, if they're not, then you have to go back and say, well, was last week maybe not quite as promising as it appeared at first blush.
I take it that knee injury with Sam Bradford is just minor, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he played every snap Monday night, and they as many teams are, do not like to talk about injuries, but he has been out on the practice field going through individual drills in the last 2 days and in the portion of practice that we've seen, and he's looked fine. I mean, I would be very surprised if he doesn't play. I'm sure the listing is questionable just to have some mystery about it, but I would be very, very surprised if he's not in there.
All right, what do you think? I was a little surprised the line came out at 7. I thought it was a tad high. I expect it to be a good game. Who do you got?
I got the Steelers in this one. I think being at home, and you know, certainly they want to come out and look sharper than they did against the Browns on Sunday. I have thought for a while this is probably the toughest road test on the Vikings schedule, and I think when they are sitting there trying to figure some things out with their nickel corner spot, especially that's a spot where Ben Roethlisberger can do some damage. I Mike Zimmer has got a long history with Ben Roethlisberger. It'll be, I think, the 13th time that they've matched up with one another in both their respective careers. And Roethlisberger, I think, has gotten the better of him most of those times. And Zimmer's got 4 wins, and Roethlisberger has 8 to this point. But I think Roethlisberger wins his 9th time against Zimmer. I think the Steelers win it. And probably a close one. I think 7 is a little high as well. I guess I put the Steelers by 4, maybe like a 20-16, something like that. Maybe a couple of red zone stops that keep the Vikings from taking the lead. But yeah, I got the Steelers in this one.
Ben, really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks so much, man. Awesome. For our listeners, again, you can follow Ben on Twitter. Get what's going on with the Vikes here going into the game at Gessling, GOESSLINGSTRIB. Thanks so much for being with us.
Sounds good, guys. We'll talk in 2021, if not before.
Excellent, man. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay, welcome back, Dave. We lauded Ben on the open. Really fun stuff there, and you know it's nice for I know you feel the same way when guys who know the team that the Steelers are going to play, they know it that well that they give us keys to look on. And he talked about Antonio Brown in the slot and how guys are going to match up and some of the different things the Vikings are going to do. It's always fun to have those keys to look for.
Yeah, it's probably better to have those interviews more to the front of the show as well, too. That way I don't give them all away.
Right. Or do it after we do our part.
Yeah. That way I make myself look a little bit smarter.
Hopefully.
Let's
talk about what's going on around the NFL. We've talked about where the Steelers are roster-wise. Danny Woodhead goes on the IR today for the Ravens. We mentioned his injury on Wednesday. We know what's going on with David Johnson. I didn't get a chance to see much of it. I saw a couple highlights, and I know what happened, and I've read the recaps and stuff. I didn't get a chance to see much of this game. Now, the Bengals are 2 weeks into the season without a touchdown. They're 0-2. They're 0-2 at home. It is a disaster for Cincinnati. What did you take away from that game last night?
Ooh, we? You know, we said before the game, you know, wondering, you know, on Thursday night and all, the way these couple teams looked in that week one. I think I said, oh, man, are we in for something like a 16 to whatever?
You were dead. You were dead on. I hope you bet the house on the under.
Well, the thing is, though, is that I mean, it didn't take a rocket surgeon to kind of maybe predict those kind of things there. But boy, what an ugly game there. And you know, I don't think anybody probably expected the Texans to score a lot of points in this game. But on the flip side, I kind of thought, okay, you know, this is Andy Dalton. They've still got some weapons there on offense, and the Bengals' defense really isn't all that bad. I really was expecting the Bengals to score no less than maybe – you know, 19 to 20 points there. But, you know, their offensive line, let me tell you, the Bengals have some issues on that offensive line. And we kind of knew that, you know, that they lose Andrew Whitworth and they lost the other kid, the right guard that they let get away to Cleveland there, Kevin Zeitler there. They have some issues definitely on that offensive line. And, you know, they're trying to do kind of a rushing game by committee with Joe Mixon and Hill and Giovanni Bernard, and you know that doesn't seem to be going well. And outside of a guy like AJ Green, you know, they have some questions there in the passing game. And Boyd, the young kid out of University of Pittsburgh, was a surprise scratch last night. Supposedly his hamstring flared up on him, and he wasn't on the injury report all week. And, you know, Eifert really, you know, hasn't looked all that great in two games here. So now you turn around. Andy Dalton completed 20 of 35 pass attempts for 224 yards, but under pressure quite a bit in that game. A guy like J.J. Watt didn't show up, you know, real big in the statistical category and all, but, you know, he was wrecking havoc there, and Dalton missing a lot of throws. Some he just threw right away. You know, just threw him away there. And A.J. Green was unhappy after the game. And as you said, this is a touchdownless Bengals team 2 weeks into the season here. And you know, look, their defense is going to keep them in a lot of games. But, boy, not a good start for them. 0-2. And as you even previewed even before the game, this is a Bengals team now that opened the first two games at home that now has to go on the road and play the Green Bay Packers. And if you start off a season 0-3, oh, boy, it's not good. And I think this is the first time that the Bengals have started 0-2 since, I think, 2008. And that season they started off, I think, 0-7 and 0-8 and only won four games that whole season.
Yeah, you look at their schedule here. You're 0-2, and you got three of the next four on the road. All of a sudden, you want to talk about – I mean, I'm going to just assume they lose at Green Bay. You want to talk about a big game. How fired up are the Browns going to be at home in week four to have the Bengals coming in 0-3? They get the Bills and then at Pittsburgh. I mean, if the Bengals lose the game at Cleveland and are 0-4, the season's over. I mean, I'll write them off. Is Marvin Lewis, if the Bengals are under 500, it's so hard to predict this, but is Marvin Lewis's job gone? Does he get moved out finally?
Boy, you know, that is, and I know already, and you know, the Bengals fans, I know, have been upset with them for a while there, and, you know, they're starting 0-2. I mean, look, I mean, the season is over for them at 0-3, if you ask me. I mean, going to be really, really tough to get a wild card spot from that point forward. Not impossible, but, you know.
They're on the road at the Vikes. They're on the road at Denver. They're on the road at Tennessee. And they're on the road, you know, who knows what Jacksonville is. But, I mean, they're on the road at Tennessee, Denver, and the Vikings, and the Steelers, and the Ravens. If they're 0-3 and have those five, you know, I 500's a stretch at that point.
Yeah, and look, I don't think they fire Marvin at any point during the season. I think,
I agree.
Mike Brown, I just can't see him flying off the handle like that. But, I mean, David, when you look at this roster, and I know they've got some young kids in there and all like that, but I mean, I thought they drafted reasonably well. Heck, you know, a couple of those edge rushers in Lawson and the other kid out of Kansas State there. I like those guys. I mean, I thought Lawson caused a little bit of havoc last night. And yeah, they could probably use to get past Pac-Man Adam Jones here in the near future there. But you look at their roster top to bottom; they got some pedigree in it there. So I mean, is this all going to be quarterback related with Andy Dalton? And I mean, look, not a lot of people have viewed him as a top 10 quarter or 15 quarterback, you know, since he's come into the league, even though he's, you know, they've been in the playoffs several times yet to win a playoff game here. But man, with what they have on the roster, if they finish sub 500 this year, you have to wonder if Marvin Lewis, if his job is safe. That's for sure. And you really have to wonder if they are sub 500, is Andy Dalton's job safe?
Yeah, they don't have anywhere to go, but you certainly think that they probably start looking in the draft. The killer for them is, you know, they planned well. In 2015, they took those two linemen with their top two picks with the idea that, yeah, we might lose Whitworth and, you know, we could lose, the guard who went to Cleveland. Well, I've drawn a blank. What was his name?
Zeitler,
right. So we might lose those guys, so we're going to draft to bulk up that offensive line. Those guys haven't produced, and that's the killer. And I don't know. Obviously the jury's out on John Ross right now. But at that high in the draft, it feels a little bit like a luxury pick. You know, they let their two receivers go again 2 years ago. They didn't want to pay him $7 and $8 million. And I understand. But you probably wanted to sign one of those guys. And you talked about Tyler Boyd. I wouldn't say he's been a massive disappointment, but he certainly hasn't. He hasn't been a huge win yet. He's a smart kid. He was a great route runner in college, and I think he's a talented guy. We'll see if he can come forward. But yeah, it is going to be these next 2-3 weeks are going to be really interesting for the Bengals. So I got you on that one. Do you know how we did last week?
No, in fact, I forgot. The season started. I forgot to even put up the post. last week, and that's a rarity, so I'll have them all combined Sunday morning there, but I haven't gone back through to see how we did.
All right, well, I got you last night. I had Houston. I think you had Cincinnati. Let's get to it here. 1 o'clock, 10, this is now, you know, probably was a game that nobody was paying attention to when they looked at the schedule, but Tennessee goes to Jacksonville. A bit of an interesting game here with Jacksonville's impressive performance on the road in Houston. Now they get to go home, their home opener, obviously dealing with the weather issues that they've had to deal with down there. They're getting a point and a half against the Titans team that certainly was disappointing in their home opener against the Raiders. Dave, I'm kind of curious to see how this game goes, and I don't have a strong view. It's hard to get behind Blake Bortles. I think Tennessee rebounds and plays well in this game and gets the win, but I'll be rooting for Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, so you think the Titans cover that 1.5 then, right?
I'll take them. Yeah, 1.5.
Yeah. I'll have the Titans covering that as well too. There's no reason to think that the Titans will lose this to a Jacksonville team, even though it's on the road.
Okay, the Ravens are given 8 to Baltimore. The Ravens are given 8 to Cleveland. Look, I'm on the Browns bandwagon. We'll do the Eagles Depot thing all over again. I think the Browns, I've got them down for, 4 or 5 wins this year. I don't think they're going to get one this week, but I think they keep it close. I'll take the 8 points.
Boy, this is a tough one because knowing that Kaiser looked competent. He looks like they might have something there. But with that said, the Ravens defense – I thought played extremely well in their opener, and I know, yeah, the narrative can be, well, it's only the Bengals, but I think Harbaugh's going to have something for Kaiser. So I like the Ravens -8. Is that what you have, Matt? 8?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, give me the Ravens -8 at home.
Okay. Everybody, the Bills, they're getting 7 at Carolina. I'm not as sold on Carolina as other people are. Give me Tyrod Taylor in a run game that does some damage. I don't think the Bills win, but again, I'll take the TD on the road.
I'm with you that I think Carolina still might be a little bit overrated this year. Now, new head coach still and all like that, but I mean, Shady McCoy will give you a chance, and we'll see what that defense can do against a guy like Cam Newton. But I'm with you on this. I like the Bills plus the touchdown on the road.
Pats -6 against the Saints. Given the Pats, they're going to be fired up. You go play in a dome. They're going to score 40 against them. I don't think the Saints' defense is bad as people are making it out to be. I don't think they were terrible on Monday night. But, 40-20, give me the Pats.
And, yeah, even with all those injuries New England has at wide receiver, hey, is DeMarcus Ayers going to get called up on Saturday? You want something to watch for to sit around looking at the Twitter machine on Saturday. That's something to watch for, and that could happen with Amendola banged up. Of course, Edelman, I think another one of their receivers is Matthew Slater, I think, is banged up as well, too. So, if anything, they might need DeMarcus Ayers to return some punts for him. But yeah, New Orleans is just probably going to be just a team this year. So give me the Pats on the road, laying a 6.
Arizona and Indy announced this morning that Jacoby Brissett's going to get the start over Tolzien. Greg Doyle, who's a very good writer for the Indianapolis Star, wrote this article yesterday saying, you know, the uncomfortable truth is that Bruce Arians is a better coach than Chuck Pagano. I'm not sure who he was debating with that. I think everybody knows that Arians is a better coach than Pagano. I wouldn't touch this game with your money, Dave. Arizona -7. Yeah, I'll go with the Cards, but I don't like it.
Yeah, I actually do like this game, and I'll be touching it with my money. Cards -7. This is to me, this is a stone cold lock, a lead pipe lock of the week here.
It's in the Cards. Okay, the Eagles +5.5 at Kansas City. Again, this is an interesting game. Watching what the Chiefs did in New England, I'm sure. There will be a love affair with the Chiefs this week. Give me the Eagles +5.5 just for the heck of it. I won't be touching this one either.
You know what? We would have done great in the 80s and 90s with having one of those early Saturday morning tout shows. Remember those, David?
Yeah.
Call those 800 numbers or 900 numbers. And all, like, I got to admit, they got some of my money. we had to come up with unique handle nicknames for us both there, but Kansas City, very impressed with what they did in that opener against the Patriots there. The Eagles, I'm not convinced. I'm still not convinced about that offense over there. And these two teams know a lot about each other with these head coaches there. I'm all aboard the Chiefs bandwagon and Alex Smith bandwagon right now. Give me the Chiefs laying the 5.5.
Who did the Eagles play last week? What was their game?
Redskins, wasn't it?
Yeah, they won. They won in D.C. Right. Okay. Bears. Going to Tampa, Tampa -7. The Bears are a team that, Steelers are going to play them next week, and I haven't done any homework on the Bears. I didn't see any of the the competitive game they were in last week. I don't have a feel. I've always been a little bit of a Mike Glennon fan in terms of second-tier quarterbacks. I think he's a decent guy. But I'm going to go with Tampa at home here. I think this is a good – this should be a good Buccaneers team. We'll see if they get it done. But I'll take Tampa -7.
Yeah, this is like Tampa coming off a bye, or it is Tampa coming off of a bye here at home. No reason not to take the Bucs -7 here.
Chargers -3.5. Miami, again, same situation with Tampa. Tampa, they went out there early. They've been out on the West Coast for a while. Chargers get a little unlucky there with that field goal. They were, Vance Joseph calls timeout. They misses it, and then they block it. They get the win. They never win close games, blah, 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 blah. Give me the Chargers -3.5 at home.
Yeah, I'm with – boy, that Joey Bosa, he's something. Isn't he fun to watch, man? I mean, he really, really is. You want to talk about kind of the next, I guess, J.J. Watt, if you will. He's very fun to watch. I think he's just going to harass a guy like Cutler all day there and force Cutler maybe into a turnover or two, and if not, put him on his back a couple times. So, yeah, I like the Chargers at home laying the 3.5.
You got the Jets getting 13 at the Raiders. The Jets are the new Browns. God, are they that bad? Maybe. I'm in New York right now, and you read the New York papers, and it's they're penciling it in at 0-16. 13's a lot. Are Amari Cooper's hands questionable, Dave? Is that the thing that keeps him from being an elite receiver?
Yeah. Crabtree as well, too, you know. I don't know. I don't know what you're hedging here. I'm taking Raiders minus 13.
All right, I'll take the Raiders, too. Rams, we got both L.A. teams at home this week. How about that? Both teams in L.A. are at home and both playing 405 and 425. Rams minus 2.5 and the Redskins. Are you buying what you saw last week with Jared Goff and the new coaching staff and simplifying things and Aaron Donald back in the lineup? You're going to take the Rams minus 2.5? Because I'm going to take
You can have them at that. I mean, I like Aaron Donald being back. I'm not ready to buy into that Rams offense just yet there. And I think Washington's offense capable of being a little bit better than they were against the Eagles. So I personally think Washington wins this one outright. So I want that 2.5 there. But, boy, what if the Redskins open up 0-2 with all that money sunk into Kirk Cousins there in the nation's capital? I'd like to listen to those talk shows.
Dallas at Denver, Dallas minus 2. Give me the boys.
Yeah, I've got to jump on Dallas minus 2 as well.
And then we've got the Niners at Seattle plus 14. Boy, a little bit of work for Shanahan to do there to get that offense up and running with Brian Hoyer. I think people expected a little better than what they gave. Is 14 too much? I'll lay 14, Dave.
So you'll take the Seahawks and lay it? I'll 14 is too much in an NFL game. Give me and that Seahawks offensive line still has some issues. I think they're banged up still at running back here. Give me the 49ers plus the 14.
All right. That brings us to Monday night. And Monday night, Sunday night, we've got the Packers at the Falcons. This is a great one, Sunday night. Green Bay gets 3 on the road. I went against Atlanta for a long time last year, and I was wrong. And I know you've been a bigger fan of Matt Ryan than I have, and he was well-deserved as the MVP. But I'll take the Packers plus 3 on the road here.
Wow. Yeah, this is a tough – you want to talk about one to stay away from. It's definitely this game here. That place is going to be rocking in Atlanta here. Give me Atlanta, lay the 3. What the heck?
All right, Monday night. How they pick this is a great Monday night game in week 2. Detroit at the Giants. Detroit, yeah, I'm so anti-Giants. I got blinders on that are anti-Giants. So I'll take the Lions plus 3.
Yeah, and if Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't play in this, Eli's going to be on his back a ton. They don't have tackles there, you know, as well, and they don't have a running back. I do like Evan Ingram at tight end there, but I think Detroit should have the offensive weapons to be able to get this done and a good enough defense. So give me the Lions plus the 3.
As you mentioned when we were talking earlier, the Steelers opened at 7 and that line's come down. I hadn't actually seen that this morning, and when we talked to Ben earlier, down to 5.5. That makes it a lot more interesting for me. I would have probably liked the Vikings in a touchdown, but I do think the Steelers are going to win this game. I don't feel great about where they are right now, but it's going to be, you know, we've talked about it. This is a juicy matchup. And if you're a football fan, we're going to learn a lot about all the teams in the NFL this week. But this is a particularly good one, seeing what the Vikings did with the passing game. And we'll see how the Steelers, you know, revamped secondary comes up in this one. Dave, I'm going to take the Steelers 24-20, kind of where Ben was. But obviously that means I'm on the Vikings plus 5.5.
Yeah, look, I think the big matchup here is how this, whether or not they can get Sam Bradford to be able to hold on to the football. They need to make sure they get Bradford in some of these predictable down and distances. If you do that, then that ball's not coming out in 2.5 seconds. Make him hold on to the football. Give Watt and Chickalo or Bud Dupree or whoever on the edge there a chance to get after the quarterback here. Ben is, Mike Tomlin, 9-1 in home openers? And Ben normally good at home as well, too. Are the Vikings for real? I think the Steelers win this, and I'm jumping all over laying that 5.5 there. So give me Steelers 27, Vikings 20. I like them to win by a touchdown here.
All right, good stuff. Well, fun podcast today. Again, our appreciation to Ben Gessling for joining us, the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Dave, this should be a good one, and we'll get a chance to get after it Monday and see where we stand.
Absolutely. Can't wait to recap this one on Monday. Hopefully we're talking about a 2-0 Steelers team there. So, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll see a donate button up right navigational bar. That'll take you to PayPal so you can do it online securely there. Another donation or two this week. We certainly do appreciate that from our listeners as well, too. And the number have been outstanding. Boy, people all over the world listen to this thing, David, and it's really sobering when you actually look at the stats and the and geographical locations where people listen to this podcast from. So until Monday, David.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, and I will say this at the beginning of Monday's podcast, but let's do a roll call and see how many different countries we have listeners from. So if you're listening from somewhere outside the United States, shoot us an email and just tell us where. We'll put the pins in the map and see where we are, because it's fun for Dave and I to obviously know that we've got the reach that we have. And I know it's not always easy to hear these types of things, but appreciate the listenership. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.